Well, welcome, Mr. Lerway. Thank you for being here and putting your name in the mix.
Good to be here.
Quick order of the 45 minutes that we have. We'll ask you for an opening statement. If you have any questions, you can do that. Then we'll have questions for you. And when we're about 5 minutes left in the time, you can give a closing statement to us at that point as well. So, again, welcome, and the floor is yours, unless you have any questions first, too.
Thank you. Well, I'm Steve Lerway, as you know. I've lived the last 24 years in St. Cloud. I'm married to my wife, Peggy, of 38 years. She is a registered nurse. We have 4 children, 3 daughters and a son, and a new grandson born last month, Jack, our first. So we're excited about that. Professionally, I'm an attorney, CPA. My status is inactive there, though. And I'm a certified financial planner and a chartered financial consultant. My career started out of law school. I spent 2 years in public accounting and then spent the next 20 years in the trust business, the last 9 of that 20 as president of Bremer Trust Company. Last 14 years, I've run my own company, Lerway Financial Advisors, which is a registered investment advisory. I've had an abundance of governance experience over the years, not only with my own company, but with Bremer Trust, where I also served as president of it and president of the mutual fund that we created. But I've spent a lot more with governance in volunteer work, and probably the most impactful here for this group would be my time that I spent with the St. Cloud Hospital and CentraCare. I spent 9 years as a board member for the St. Cloud Hospital, the last 3 as chairman of the board. And when my term came to an end, they asked me if I would join the governing board with CentraCare. CentraCare, if you don't know, is a $1.1 billion health organization with 8,500 employees, 6 different hospitals, and many other entities in addition to that. During the period of time that I was there, I had a great deal of governance experience. I was involved in hiring many people through the process of interviewing, et cetera, including the most recent CEO of CentraCare, which just started this year. I've also, during my time as president or as chair of the board, we opened a $225 million bed tower. It was the largest project in the state of Minnesota for that particular year. We also received many awards, but we also had a few negative things that, you know, as a board member, I needed to make sure that those were taken care of and were transparent to the public and our stakeholders. I've really been a fiduciary since 1979. In my own business, in fact, as a registered investment advisor, we're considered a fiduciary under ERISA. I certainly understand financials. I reviewed the U.S. Financial statements. I can find my way around a balance sheet and a profit and loss and cash flow statement. I also understand investments. The U has $2 billion on their balance sheet in investments and $2.5 billion on the foundation.
Yes.
So, yeah. And I've had dealings with regulators as well over the years, had kept good relationship, but you know, organizations like the SEC, DOL, IRS, Comptroller of the Currency, State of Minnesota, et cetera. The best answer to the question at how I have addressed equity and diversity in my career is to say that on all the boards that I had the responsibility for finding candidates, I really sought candidates that would bring balance to the board. At the trust company, talking Bremer Trust, I saw women candidates for the board, primarily because when I got there, it was dominated by men, and we were able to add several women candidates. At the hospital, I sat on the nominating committee, and our goal is always to mirror the makeup, to have the board mirror the makeup of the community. We created a diversity category for the nominating committee, And at the end of my term, we had equal balance, 9 male, 9 female board members. We had 2 people of color, and we elected our first openly gay man, married gay man, to the board. Now, my goal in finding board members had not been to fill a slot. I wanted to find people that would be contributing board members right away. And but diversity certainly and equity was certainly a concern as well. My leadership strengths are I lead by example. I will not ask somebody to do something that I wouldn't be willing to do. I have an abundance of common sense, and I usually don't take myself too seriously. I try and have a sense of humor, and I think a lot of times that breaks tension in meetings. I was not a student of the University of Minnesota, but I've been a lifelong admirer and an avid supporter of the university as an educational institution, and I've been a long-time season ticket holder for various sporting events. I have had family members and such that have graduated from the U. I have 2 brothers-in-law. My son-in-law graduated from the U, and my daughter graduated last May from the U. As far as the role of the Board of Regents, and for that matter, any board, I think there's really primarily 3 things that you do. Number one is you help establish goals, and you make sure that they're stretch but yet reachable goals, and you monitor that, and you should understand why those goals aren't met if they aren't. Number two is you put the right people in place. Make sure that they're mentoring their subordinates, that they have a succession plan in place, and that they have an achievable strategic plan. And lastly, I think you protect the reputation of the entity that you represent. Now, bad things are going to happen, and a lot of times the best way that you can handle that is not only react but overreact and be transparent in that whole process. My understanding of the responsibilities of being an individual regent are that you express your opinions, don't be silent, you avoid conflicts of interest, you want to always represent the university in a positive light, and I think part of it is being there. You want to make the meetings, you want to, you know, be there, be a representative. Why would I want to be a regent? I hadn't really thought about it much, but I had watched John Frobenius, who is the current regent, and he came to me and said, you know, you'd make a good regent. And I said, John, you know, you've done an excellent job. I'm not sure I could do as well as you. And he said, no, you would. And so I thought about it, and I came to these conclusions. The university is a leading academic institution in Minnesota. It's extremely important to our quality of life, and it's an economic engine that helps our state to the tune of $8.6 billion a year. So I thought, you know, I can't turn down that opportunity, and that would be kind of fun and interesting. So how will I know I succeeded at the end of that term? Well, if I can look in the mirror and say, you know, you left the university when you left in a better place than it was when you began, then I'll know that I'm successful. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. Our first question is coming from Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Laraway, thank you for applying and your interest in the regent seat. I know you just told us that you were not an alumni of the university, but I know if you become a regent, there's that long tie out there for you somewhere. Reading through your application, one of the things that you talked about as one of your important issues to deal with has to do with what you describe as alignment in the health sciences field relating to the teaching, research, and patient care missions. I'd like to expand on it a bit more and tell me, first of all, what do you see as that alignment now, and in what way does it need to change?
Well, let me just speak anecdotally. I see some, you know, in talking to some people, I see some areas that could be better aligned. And certainly the whole healthcare field has changed dramatically over the last few years. And we're going from a volume-based reimbursement system to a value-based reimbursement system. And, and all the stakeholders, the physicians and nurses, administration, the state, federal, et cetera, all are, you know, part of that process. So, you know, my thought would be that we should work hard to come together and make sure that we support, you know, the various healthcare units at the university, and there's many. And, you know, I would, as a region, I would do my best to, you know, see that we make that move from volume-based to value-based situation as far as reimbursement.
Okay. Thank you.
Does that kind of address it?
Well, I guess one of the things I was wondering is you talk about we need to align. I was wondering if you had any concerns about the system now.
Only anecdotally. I've talked to a few people, and they said things could be better aligned. But, you know, I'm too new to really say that, you know, I know exactly all the ins and outs of where the issues are.
Fair enough.
Very good. Harriet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Laraway. You stated in your opening statement a very true fact. Bad things happen.
Yep.
You followed that by sometimes the best response is to not only react but to overreact. So I have a two-part question for you. Give me an example of this in reality in your career. And then let's go back. You obviously learned something and applied it to come to this realization. Tell me about maybe the worst crisis that you had to go through that maybe wasn't handled as well as it could have or that you observed or were part of.
I'm gonna mention two different things that happened at the hospital, and both of them are public, so I'm not violating any confidentiality. But one is we had a drug diversion issue where a nurse was actually took a hypodermic needle and took drugs out of bags. And then the other one was we've had some issues with violence in various units of the hospital. And I want to particularly address the violence because I think it's a good example of, you know, how I got involved with that. Is I actually learned that we had some violence on Care 11 TV. That was the first time that I learned. And so and it's public, obviously, so I'm not violating anything. And so I called the president of the hospital and got a hold of him, and he was actually out of the hospital. And I said, you know, this is very important, and we need to get back to our stakeholders, the patients, the employees, and everybody else, and we need to let them know that we take this very seriously, and we should not delay in doing that because this is extremely important. So to the credit, the next day there was an email that went out to all the stakeholders saying, you know, pretty much that. And since that time, they've put in place numerous programs which decelerate violence, you know, and help you determine when there might be possibilities of violence. And it seems to be working. And Why is that important? Those are reportable events as well under the, you know, NEVER events, as they call them, that the Minnesota Hospital Association reports.
If I could follow that up. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Is that a reaction or an overreaction?
Well, I think, the reaction would be to just let people know and not do anything about it. But the overreaction is to get in contact with all the stakeholders and make sure that you assure them that you take this extremely, you believe this is extremely serious, and that you take it seriously and that we're going to do something about it. And I think the overreaction part, I think it was very important, was doing the training. Everybody has gone through training, every employee, on how to decelerate violence.
When I hear that, what I hear more is less of overreaction and more strategic risk management planning.
Well, I think there's an aspect of that in there as well.
Sure.
And you know, and they also have to look at the financial ramifications as well. So, for instance, that happened to be in the behavior health area. But there's also a lot of violence that happens in the emergency room.
Sure.
And so there is currently on the board, and it's been approved by the CenterCare board to remodeling so that there's an area where you can bring in, potentially violent people. They also did a really good job of talking to the city and the county sheriff and police department, because many times people would be just dropped off at the emergency room because they didn't know what to do with them. And so they actually brought a person on, not on staff, but they hire him for the weekend, to a policeman to monitor that as well and help with that.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Good. Margaret.
You brought up your knowledge of the University of Minnesota Foundation.
Yes.
And understanding the scope of their endowments, and you're the first one that's done that. I'm going to ask you a two-part question. In your past two jobs, what professional role did you play in Bremer's philanthropy, because it's huge,
yes,
and also as a financial advisor in advising wealthy clients? Then the second part of the question is, what advice do you have for the University of Minnesota Foundation, because four of those board seats are held by regents?
Well, great questions. And my experience at Bremer, the actual Bremer Foundation, I was not on that board, but we certainly worked with other foundations and the trust company, and we tried to make sure that that they were fiduciarily in line and not violating rules, and we managed oftentimes the assets in there. I certainly would help at times if on certain instances, meeting with potential clients. My background is, I'm an attorney, so I have some experience in estate planning. I also have done tax work, so I understand the value of that. And I think you have to create a case for giving, sometimes, and there's many reasons for that. Kind of forgot the last half.
What advice would you have for the University of Minnesota Foundation? Take off that other hat. Now you're a regent at the University of Minnesota.
To be honest with you, I would not give you any advice today. I would have to take a look at that. I think I'd be a little bit premature. You're obviously doing a lot of things right with a foundation of, the size that it is, and it keeps growing and keeps doing a great job and good investments. But I don't have any real advice today to tell you on changes that I would suggest that you make.
A wise person passes when they don't have the background information.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
Paul.
To everyone, in the spirit of full disclosure, Steve Laraway and I share a notable distinction. We are both recipients of our respective Boy Scout Council's Silver Beaver Award.
Oh.
And so my question is in that context. Both Steve and I have been very productive volunteers with the Boy Scouts over a long period of time. What have you learned in your Boy Scout volunteer career that would help inform you to be the best possible regent that you could be?
Well, the Boy Scouts has had really a positive impact on me in a couple of different ways. One is, I grew up in New Ulm. It was a way to expand my horizons, to go to camp and do other things. I didn't get to the national events, but, I had some chances perhaps, to do that, but it didn't work out. And at the council level, when I served as president of the council, what I asked him to do was put together a day in each kind of key community in the council, and that would have been Brainerd and Long Prairie, Little Falls, St. Cloud, And we lined up a whole day visits to key people there. For instance, like the sheriff's department, the editor of the paper, the superintendent of schools, some of the key people at the businesses there, et cetera. And that proved a point, and something that I learned from Scouts is that it's all about relationships. It's all about the people, making those relationships, visiting with them, spending the time, getting to know them, being, if they have issues, empathetic with that. And the Boy Scouts was a lot of that. And, you know, I don't mean to be hokey here, but the Scout Law is something that's very, very close to me, and I try and follow that.
So if I could, Chair Breedy, we all know that we have an active UMAA chapter in St. Cloud. Yeah. Do they today have Gopher for a Day event, or if they don't, could something like that be used to spread the good news?
They recently had the basketball team played Louisville, and the two Patinos went against one another. They had an event in St. Cloud, and I went to the event, and that's a good place to, you know, sell the university and to be a salesperson for that. And, Paul Thompson puts together the events, quite often. I ran into Paul, and I was at the bowl game in Orlando, and I ran into Paul there and talked to him a little bit. But, yeah, those are great opportunities.
Okay.
It's all about relationships. I don't care what the profession is. It really boils down to, looking across the table and talking to that person, getting to know them.
Very good. Harriet, another question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Larrabee, in John Corbanius's departure from the board, we're losing an enormous amount of financial knowledge, mm-hmm. and what I would describe as high finance knowledge. Can you talk a little bit about your competency in this area? And maybe one of the most sophisticated pieces of knowledge that you might have in that area.
Well, I've had a lot of experience, especially on the nonprofit side of things, working with financial statements. I've gotten involved in some of the bond issuance things that we did at the hospital and those sorts of things. And on the other hand, I've had it, really in a lot of ways. Working with a bigger institution is more complicated, but in a way, there's just more zeros.
Right.
And so you need to, bear that in mind, that a financial statement, a profit loss, or, for a nonprofit, about something different, but balance sheets and that aren't a lot different. There's just maybe more items on there and more more zeros. So I took a look at the financial statements for the university and, tried to get a little bit of an understanding of where the revenue came from and where the expenses are and that sort of thing. So does that answer your question?
If I could follow up on the investment side as well. Would you, obviously, and you mentioned earlier you haven't had a chance to really look at the portfolio of investments at a detailed level, but is that something that you feel that you could add value in?
Yeah, to be honest, and without a doubt, I mean, I do understand investments, and that's been my career, and, I understand why you do different things. I understand diversification. I understand the need for, different types of assets in there, and, I think I can.
Thank you.
Pat.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Larrabee. You just briefly mentioned diversity in financial. How does that play into diversity in boards? And you've already touched a little bit on that in your opening statement. And this isn't my actual question, but it may end up being.
Well, obviously, when I look at I've tried to add as much diversity as I can to the various boards that I've been there. And early on, it was bringing more women on the boards that I was involved in. And at the hospital, it was more. Well, first of all, we wanted to balance the number, and we were able to do that. But we also wanted to try to represent the community, the makeup of the community. Sometimes that's difficult, but what we did there is we created the nominating committee has a long list of potential candidates. We created a diversity, bucket, so to speak, on there. And the idea is that to do due diligence on them. And these are up-and-comers, and maybe they're not just ready yet for the board, but they might be at some point in the future. And, I would love nothing more than to have had the board be exactly mirroring the community for the hospital and that. But sometimes it's difficult, and, you start at home plate, and then you get to first, second, and so on. And sometimes you have to start doing that, and that's kind of where we're at.
Thank you. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Harriet took my original question, so I'm going to have to probably borrow on somebody else's here real quick. references certainly talked about your strengths. And Margaret would say often that we learn more from our failures than we do our successes.
No doubt.
What would, if you had to look back at your career and your service on boards, what might be one of those things that you'd want to do a do-over on?
Well, there's a lot things. I guess I would go to look at some decisions that have been made that have been less than successful financially, and certain things that we've gotten into or tried haven't worked out. But I agree with Margaret that I think you learn a lot from failure, probably more than that. And so we did, and I did, and some of them are personal things, business type of things. I certainly would, a few of them I like some do-overs because they were a little costly.
Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm intrigued somewhat by your statement about an important issue having to do with economic development, and you related it to development of talent and personnel. My somewhat related question, but a little tie-in here, is that the university, as all higher institutions of higher education, are having problems in order to control the costs of tuition.
Right.
University, with the help of the legislature, has been able to keep it flat for the last couple of years. But the next step is, how do you sustain that? My opinion is that you can't long-term do that. So I'd like your view as to how does the university increase revenues or find other sources of revenues in order to fund the operation?
Yeah, it's a difficult answer and one that will take some time, but I think you try and create more and more, and there's many of them there already, but alliances with business, alliances with in the research area so that the grant dollars can increase and the business oriented dollars can increase there, and that's reaching out. One of the keys is outreach, and I think there's opportunity within the business community to make more of those connections, not only in the metro area, but other areas as well. I think another thing that I feel is an issue, and I talked to a number of regents and asked them their thoughts as well. But one of them is let's keep our good students here, the students that we educate, that especially the those that are advanced degrees. Let's try and keep those in the state. If we can find some way to do that, to keep them here, that's important. And let's see if we can't find ways, in addition to that, to recruit more students in. So that's what I was referring to. I think that we need to, there's a combination there of keeping the good students here that will become professors that will lead research areas and which will lead to grants.
Thank you.
Very good. Kathy.
Sure. So during your opening comments, you had made a comment about the university being the economic driver for the state. Lois, who is sitting behind you and normally would ask this question, I'm going to field it for her. How do you see your role, if you were appointed being the region, to generating revenue and income outstate as opposed to just in-state? Do you have any thoughts on?
Well, I think in that, you know, this is for the 6th Congressional District. I think one of the things that I would do is probably the first 30 days I'd try to get out to all the major communities and find out, you know, I'd try and work with the university to find out who the key people are, and I'd try and sit down with them and just find out what's on their mind and, you know, what were some things that they could, you know, how we could work together on things. And I'd spend part of that first 30 days, too, just, you know, the university is a complicated organization, no question, and I would spend some time just touring the facilities and talking to the key people as well. But I think that would be one way, is to, you know, just ask them the question, what are some ways that we could collaborate on, you know, projects or those sorts of things. But I would spend several days doing that. There's a number of large communities in the 6th District.
Mr. Chair, just a point of information, making sure that you know that you would be a regent for the University of Minnesota, not
right.
for the 6th District.
Yeah, I understand.
Jim.
Mr. Lurie, thank you for applying. Mr. Chairman, thank you. How long were you the chair of the St. Cloud Hospital Board, and how many hours a month did that take?
It was the last 3 years, and hours a month. It was probably about 40 hours a month. I had lots of meetings with the president and other different committees.
Very good. Bert.
Mr. Lairway, you worked for Bremer for about 10 years, which is a fairly structured environment, and then you launched out and started your own business. So what prompted you to do that? And now that you've done that for over 10 years, any reflections upon that decision? And is there anything, because of your career path from a financial institution like Bremer into your own business, that any perspectives on how that could help you as a region?
I hope this doesn't reflect negatively on me, but I'm going to need to tell you the reason why is when I came to Bremer, and you know Terry Cummings, wonderful guy, still I consider him one of my mentors in that over the years, we were not very profitable, the trust company. And Terry, I remember he came to me and he said, you know, you might want to meet with the regulators the first week, which I did as president. And they basically said, you know, you need to get your act together. And, you know, we were making money, but we weren't making very much. By the 10th year, we had turned our margin from roughly 2 to 3% to about 20 to 25%, and that created some interest in the Bremer headquarters, and they said that they wanted to move my job to St. Paul. And I love St. Paul, but I was in St. Cloud, and you know, I had two daughters that basically were older, and they had gone through little problems. Made good friends, got a good education there in St. Cloud in high school. And I had two younger children that were, they're about 5 years apart between the two groups. And I said, you know, I really would like to stay here, and that's why I started the business. And it was year by year by year we grew it. The first, and I'll tell you, the first number of years were difficult. And I guess how does that reconcile with a regent? You know, I'm going to walk in if you select me and if the process I'm successful, I'm going to walk into that room and I'm going to be the least knowledgeable regent sitting around that table. I know that, but I know that with time, you know, each year as we add more time on there, I'll get better and better and better. And you know, I'm willing to put the time in and willing to work hard and for more than just the 6th district. So. Does that answer it, Bert?
It does. Thank you.
You also know Tom Simonette?
Very well.
Yeah, I worked at First Trust Company for Tom as well.
And what years?
I left about middle 80s. And that's when I moved to Ohio and worked for Bank One. He's also a mentor of mine, I would consider.
All right, good.
I'm going to pick up on your last comment. You walk into the Regents meeting knowing the least about the University of Minnesota. Your educational background are two of the finest private institutions in the country. How have you been involved, or have you been involved with either one of them, and in what role?
I have honestly not been too involved with them. I've had more focus on, you know, the business side of things and the volunteer work in my own community. You know, I have done some events and things like that for St. Thomas. I haven't really done much, to be honest with you.
In your discovery process, you talked about going to communities across the state. I applaud that. I would also advise that you look particularly at Marquette, one of the finest alumni programs in the country, public or private.
Thank you.
You're it.
One last question for you, and that is about industry knowledge. Higher ed is a business.
Right.
Healthcare is a business. Do you have specific industries where you have concentrated expertise, knowledge, expertise?
Well, by the very nature of my business, you know, in the securities industry, you have to kind of know how different industries work. And so from that perspective, you know, I pretty much know all the different sectors of the S&P 500 and what all goes into, you know, that sort of thing. My family came out of construction, so I have a good knowledge of that. I've spent a good deal of my career in finance at the trust company and accounting and, you know, in on the investment side of things. So those would probably be the two areas that I would know more than the others. But by the very nature of my position as an investment advisor, I need to know how all of them work and what brings revenue and what brings costs and what, you know, how do we end up with a positive bottom line.
If I could just follow that with, you have this construction background and knowledge. As you go through building projects, in the hospital, were you ever utilized for that expertise in contract review? It was all done by council?
Yeah, they had, you know, a staff of people that worked, you know, facilities people as well as legal counsel and that they really did that work. Like some of the things, though, that we do, like the bed tower was, I think it was 5 stories, and you ask the question, well, does it make sense to do a 6-story as long as you're going to build 5? It's a lot more cost-effective, and you have all the equipment there and that to do, you know, another story. So questions like that I could bring to the table. But
that's where I was going.
Good. I have I guess it's a softball that maybe it's more of a soft shot. And St. Cloud's had a great hockey program there. And now the WCHA is no longer.
Yeah.
What's the conversation on the street? I know the Gophers will still play them with some traditional games, but Any comments?
Well, that's always a big game.
Yes.
Whenever, you know, both areas. You know, I think they weren't happy to they love that rivalry in the WCHA, and I think they didn't like to see that go. But they had to scramble a bit because they, you know, last year they weren't in that group that became the conference that they're in, and so they hired a consultant, the old UND coach, can't think of his name. But anyway, he helped get them in that new conference. So from that perspective, but you know, as far as the U hockey, Nate Schmidt he's the same age as my youngest daughter, who graduated from the U. So I followed him all the years, and he's now graduated, playing for the Washington Caps. So
very good. Closing statement.
Well, I'm gonna just say that I want to thank you for this opportunity. If I'm selected to go through, I will work very hard. I understand, that you have to always reflect the University of Minnesota in a positive light. I will do that, and I will be a great salesperson for you, and I will put in the time that's necessary to do that. I get asked to be on a lot of boards, but I don't join them unless I feel that I can have an impact, and unless I feel that I have the time to put it in and I'm committed to do that. So I want to thank all of you, too. I know there was 19 candidates, and I think I'm towards the end of the list, and that's a lot of time to commit, and appreciate that, and it'll pay off in the end for the state and for the University of Minnesota. So thank you.
Well,
thank
you. We're here for the cafeteria food.
I figured that was probably the reason. So.
We know the staff on a first name basis.